Thank you for being a Bump2 subscriber. In the second part of our conversation, we talk about moving on, hopefully with the help of Social Security disability, how COVID revealed the impact of stress on Josh's life and health, and how looking to the future, Josh is building what the disability community calls an enviable life. You have a great tweet, and it's from your son. It says, "Mom, I love my life."
Yeah. He's said that to me once, and that's why I tweeted that. He said that in the last 2 months. That's why we applied to Social Security disability. My son had enjoyed moments, and he's had a lot of wonderful moments. I certainly don't want to paint a picture that every child who is in survivorship is struggling to get through every single day. And my son has not struggled to get through every single day of 22 years. But the struggles are there. And he's had a lot of wonderful moments. But he's never told me that he has a wonderful life. It's taken this last year to give him the tools, the ability, the freedom of side effects to really build something that he's proud of and something that he finds joy in and something that gives him hope that if he continues doing what he's doing, he will be building a life that some call an enviable life. That's what you hear in the disability community. An enviable life is one that is something that you celebrate your skills, something that you're able to continue to build, something of great reward, that you get to do it with people that you care about. And at the end of the day, you get to look back and smile and proud of what you've been able to achieve. And I think for the first time, my son finally has been able to create that for himself.
Is there some long-term upside here for him?
Not sure. I keep my eye on the survivors that are about 10 years older than us. The only standard of care for neuroblastoma that was part of our treatment had only been determined the year before Josh was diagnosed. So in the grand scheme of things, he's still very much a guinea pig in terms of what does his lifelong capacity look like. So I don't have decades of research that will paint a picture of what his quality of life will continue. I watch those that are about 10 years older than him, 15 years older than him, and start to look at what life looks for them and try to imagine how that might be applicable to what my son might anticipate. I think it's a little bit of serendipity. I think it's a little bit of good luck. And you lead with a lot of faith. And you, again, all you can really do is celebrate what is best. You can hope for what is best. And I think for myself, be prepared for what may not be enjoyable. And just know that there's going to be some mixture of that in the days ahead. And maybe with a little bit of grace, he will have many more decades to come to continue to enjoy this life that he's created for himself.
From a parent's perspective, what words of wisdom would you want to share with other parents facing this?
Do a lot of breathing. Do your research. Make sure that you heal, reach out for psychosocial support, even if you don't feel like you need it, just to explore the possibility of where you are. And just as you would go to your primary care physician for a checkup, I think it's very wise for all families to do the same for psychosocial support. And take on that attitude of gratitude and support your child in whatever direction they feel the most comfortable. I think that lays out a path that's going to be rewarding, that's going to provide the most support for your child as they mature into an adult, and will allow that child to see that they see your support, that they feel your support, and that they have been given your blessing to explore the independence that is rightfully theirs as they become 16, 17, 18 years old. At the end of the day, they don't want to be a, quote, survivor. They don't want the label. They just, as Josh would often say, I just want to be Josh. And I think the greatest day is when we can let that label just slough off enough so that they aren't a survivor first, that they get to be their person first who is dealing with survivorship. To me, that's the reward.
That attitude of gratitude, I think, is very profound. And it really, if you can adopt it, particularly during difficult times, I think it's a game changer in terms of both surviving on an emotional level, but also shifting the paradigm a bit.
Well, I think it's so easy to invest in your anxiety and your fear. One of the things that I worry about as I see families that are exiting treatment right now is there is a term called scan anxiety, and it has its rightful place in the cancer community because there is a great deal of anxiety as we approach our scans, as we approach our tests. We go through many evaluations after we've completed our treatments. But I think it can run away with us. I think there's a lot of people who can invest a lot of additional emotion into that anxiety, into those fears, into the worry of relapse. And it's a charge that you have to make a decision to take on. I realized myself about 8 or 9 months after treatment that, I was one of the worst. I was taking Josh's temperature every day, and I was watching him like a hawk. And his relapse rate was extremely high. And I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror one day as I was going to give him the thermometer to take his temperature. And it suddenly hit me. I'm treating him like he's still in treatment. I wasn't celebrating that he was a survivor. I was keeping him a patient. And that distinction was extremely loud to me. And I thought, no, that's my fear. That's my anxiety. That's the threat that is challenging my spirit. I needed to celebrate Josh's survivorship and let him be the best survivor that he could possibly be. And that was when I charged myself with the need to do the hard work to heal, to find the great divide between what was real fear and what was just growing in my mind. Just because I thought about a fear, or just because we had an exam coming, that didn't mean that it was going to be positive. That didn't mean that suddenly we were going to have to go back into treatment. That didn't mean that suddenly Josh was going to have a relapse. What it meant was I was afraid. And I made a decision that I was only going to act on fact, that I was going to manage my emotion, but I would only act on fact. And so I developed this ability to recognize the fears when they erupted. And what I would do is I would literally put them kind of off to the side. I would recognize them for what they are, and I would put them off to the side. And I would say, okay, I recognize that I am worried about this or concerned about this. Let's check into a little bit, but I am not going to react to it unless it's proven to be true. And there have been some things that very much indeed have proven to be true, but there's a lot of things that I discovered really were fears that if I responded to them as if they were real, my poor son would have really lived a much more sheltered life than he deserved. And so I was really grateful for that mirror being where it was when it was, because I don't know if I would have come to that resolution quite so early. But I'm proud of how I responded to that. And I'm proud of being able to give the independence that I was able to give to Josh at such a young age to enjoy survivorship for how he has been able to enjoy it, because in our wonderful, grace, Josh has never relapsed from neuroblastoma. you know, knock on some wood. And so all of those fears were really just my emotion that I carried. It never proved, it was never actualized in any way whatsoever.
That's an incredible insight.
It's not the easy route, but it's definitely the more rewarding route to go.
Now, I think everybody who's been through this, either as a patient, a caregiver, a parent, deals with scanxiety. And I think that your ability to put it in a box and wait for fact is so important. I remember several years ago, somebody I know was concerned. She had, I think, a mammogram or something, and she was concerned about the outcome of the mammogram, and the doctor was going to get back to her in 2 weeks. And she lived those 2 weeks absolutely on the ceiling in total fear with no information. And I remember saying, you know, and don't do that. Enjoy this time, because if you get bad news, you're moving into something that is going to be very difficult and you can deal with it then. But if you don't have that news yet, enjoy your life and enjoy your relative naivete. I didn't say that to her point blank, but enjoy it right now, because if everything changes, oh, you don't want to waste 2 weeks of your life being miserable.
And I would even say, because some of my attitude was that, and I would say even a step further, that should what you are afraid of in those test results becomes true, you're going to be more grateful for how you spent those 2 weeks if, in fact, you are thrown back into treatment. And that was what I always wanted to make sure that Josh had. If we went to a test that ended up being positive, myself as a mother, I would have really drawn from the joy that we had had during that time that we spent. So I even sometimes a little twisted maybe, but I even planned a few extra things. I made sure that those 2 weeks were even a little bit more enjoyable than they might have been otherwise, just on that off chance that perhaps my fears were true. But as I said, you know, for the most part, and especially with the neuroblastoma or any other cancer, to be bluntly honest, we have been extremely grateful to not have any of those fears realized. And, that's worry that I've just been able to be grateful to have been able to table.
How has this changed your perspective on life?
I think it's a little bit deeper and a lot less future reaching. You hear of a lot of people that they're always thinking 10 years down the road instead of staying in the present. We've never really had the luxury to think that far down the road. I still don't. I would say at the most I venture maybe 5 years, and that's on a really good day. We stay a little bit closer to the present, much more in a year or 2 years down the road. And so when you're not reaching for what could be way, way in the future, you get to drink in a little bit more of the present. And just in the everyday, you know, I make a point to sit outside with my son. We have a beautiful garden that we both really enjoy in the backyard. So we sit and we enjoy the birds and we enjoy the flowers. And we'll just sit and we'll talk. I love to sit on the deck above the walkout basement where he and his musicians will play from time to time and just enjoy listening to them. I think it's just drinking in a lot of the small everyday things. And so when that's where your perspective is, it simplifies an awful lot. There's a lot of people that get caught up in a lot of business that's pretty far outside of their own sphere. And my family, my two sons and myself, we really spend a lot more time focusing on the three of us, what we want individually, what we want as a family, and enjoying each other. And for that, I'm really, really grateful.
Now,
I wouldn't say...
Some people
actually go to the distance to say they're grateful for the cancer. I don't think I can ever go there. I can be grateful for our response. Without that, I don't think I'll ever have the strength to be able to say I'm grateful for the cancer. I'm just grateful for the perspective.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.